The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Joining me for the afternoon update, Alan Butler, News Talk reporter, and Kieran Cunningham, chief sports writer with the Irish Daily Star. You're both very, very welcome. Alan, what can you tell us about this TikTok ban? Eamon mentioned the news there. So they've got a year, this Chinese company, to divest in TikTok.
Yeah, this is something US politicians have been talking about for quite a while. So the possibility of TikTok actually being banned in the US has moved a step closer. Joe Biden is going to sign in to law a bill this afternoon that the Senate has passed over in the US that would force the Chinese-based parent company of TikTok called ByteDance to sell the app. So they have 9 months to do it, and they'll get a 3 month extension if a sale is in place. But if they don't do that, the US wants to ban it.
Kieran, there are various kind of members of the Senate and Congress and all coming out talking about this. One aspect of it, actually, that I kind of found interesting were comments made by a Democratic senator who wasn't supportive of the ban. And the reason he's not supportive of the ban is because he says it takes the focus away on the broader issue of the damage social media does to young people. He thinks that's the conversation that should be had, not kind of geopolitics.
Yeah, well, I can see where he's coming from. Like the US Senate move and the moves in the US for a ban are rooted in paranoia about China and the use of
red,
data.
Red's under the bed.
Yeah, that they're harvesting data like it's Chinese owned. And we know from a lot of the way social media companies operate that it's fair to presume that they have an interest in people's data. You know, you can see that in the targeted ads you get very quickly after Googling for something or whatever. But, you know, I do find that interesting. I do agree with that politician. I can't remember what you said his name was, but that it's more important to police them. Like, they definitely need to be policed better. Like, I had an issue with Twitter a year ago. Mm. No, about 2 years ago. But somebody, I lost a family member and I'd written about it. And he brought it up in a different circumstance and he used it to taunt me. And I complained about it and to Twitter and they didn't do anything about it. So I actually got a lawyer involved. But he operated under a pseudonym. And, like, often people will say to you, that could be a 14-year-old kid in a bedroom. He was actually a retired guard, believe it or not, in the west of Ireland.
No way.
No, I swear. I don't want to go into the details of the story because I don't want to identify who he was talking about. But that's what you're like. That it seems to bring out, often social media brings out the worst in people. And people who would never say something like that to somebody they knew, let alone a stranger.
Yeah.
But that somebody in that position, who presumably is a retired guard, would have been seen as a pillar of the community, would do something like that, I couldn't believe. And that's why I do think they need greater policing. That when you lodge a complaint, that was dealt with so quickly and they said there was nothing to it and that you had to go down the legal route for them to look into it a bit further. And eventually they did ban the guy, but I'm sure he could have set up another account pretty easily the way these things operate anyway.
I don't get this kind of strays into psychology, but there's a bit of, in vino veritas, in Twitter veritas, isn't there, to it?
I know people do adopt a persona. Like, I don't think everybody you meet is like they come across on social media often. Often they can come across more acerbic or crankier or not very nice, but maybe that's part of them.
Maybe that's really
a part of personality brings out. Yeah, I don't know.
But I'm sure find when you raise that argument, people say, well, how do you police freedom of speech and all of this kind of thing?
Well, that's the argument, I think, against it from some of the states. It's kind of, this is an encroachment on First Amendment rights.
Yeah, and that's the basis through which I believe ByteDance are actually going to form their legal challenges, that this is, encroaching on the First Amendment rights of US TikTok users, of which there are 170 million. So I know this is way down the line in terms of an actual ban, but like you say, it does raise all of these questions about the security risk. And of course, if you're using something online for free, that means you're what they're making money off, basically. If you're not paying to use TikTok, you're what they're making their money off. And of course, raises the that other conversation about our new TikTok Taoiseach, as he's called.
Oh, God.
The whether or not there's a national security risk there, because over a year ago, the National Cybersecurity Centre here said TikTok should not be used on government or public service devices.
Ed Markey, Democrat, Massachusetts, who said it. I don't deny that TikTok poses some national security risks, But instead of suppressing speech in a single application, we could be addressing the root of the mental health crisis by targeting Big Tech's pernicious privacy invasion model, business model of teenagers and children in our country. Mm. I mean, it's kind of hard to disagree, I think, with the sentiment that he expresses. Mad Americans, ban TikTok, but you want to buy an assault rifle? Hey ho, no problem, man, says one listener. So what exactly has the US... So exactly, sorry, what has the US done with all our data on Twitter, Facebook and the other social media platforms? ByteDance owns multiple social media platforms as well. This listener points out, not just TikTok. And Harris should not be broadcasting on TikTok in the Taoiseach's office. That listener picking up on Ellen's point. I mentioned a story we're going to come back to after 5 o'clock. We're going to be speaking to this man who kind of campaigns on road safety on foot of his own experience. Self-confessed drunk driver, got behind the wheel with his friend, and his friend was killed and he was that seriously injured in that accident. But the RSA as well are before an Oireachtas committee today. And I thought it was really interesting, Ellen. They were asked kind of to defend the lack of these shocking ads that many of us would have been used to maybe growing up. And they explained exactly why they're maybe less impactful now than some suspect.
Yeah, even just thinking about them now, I can feel that feeling in the pit of my stomach of those really graphic ads from the noughties that just don't appear on our TV screens anymore. But a lot of people would say were really effective. But like you say, the RSA was asked about this today in the Oireachtas Transport Committee. And their defence is that the target audience for these ads, young men, it just doesn't have the same shock value anymore because of video games and the like, Call of Duty or whatever they're playing. This is their claim. That's why they've veered down different kind of avenues when it comes to trying to deter speeding and that kind of thing and get the message across.
Well, I've lost count, Kieran, at the amount of people in this studio in recent weeks as we've talked about road safety, you know, amidst kind of climbing deaths and accidents, who've called for the reintroduction of these ads. I thought that explanation was interesting. The target audience are young men. They are the most reckless drivers. And if the young men are inured to violence or not paying any attention to the ads, they lose their shock value.
Yeah, but I think there's another aspect to it, though it doesn't, that they haven't mentioned. Like, I don't think young people in general watch as many ads as they used to. Like back then, when those ads were very effective, you couldn't really fast forward through ad breaks. You sat through ad breaks. You didn't have ad blockers on websites. You know, you didn't skip forward through. I think now that there's a number of reasons like that they wouldn't be as effective. You know, in this piece, you know, it says there's a significant problem with drink driving, but there's also a huge problem with drug driving. There was a case the other day in Tyrone during the Cavan Tyrone game. A guy was stopped and he was way over the limit. He had no insurance and he had five different drugs in his system. He had no alcohol in his system, but he had five other drugs, including opioids, cocaine, cannabis, I think benzos and something else. So this is something actually, because I was talking about the other day, and you know, there's a bit of talk around the Leinster rugby game at Croke Park that you can't take a drink to your seat, but it's been like there's been a lot of coverage lately in the UK at major sporting events that cocaine is everywhere. Like there's no, that's as big an issue in anything. And what cocaine does to the brain is like, I think it encourages, if you get behind a wheel, it would encourage speeding. Like it does have you racing 100 miles an hour in every sense of the phrase. So I think this is a difficult one for them. Like they're saying as well that the numbers policing, the roads now is down significantly. It's down by 40% since 2009. And I've often wondered as well, why are cars allowed to be so fast? Like when there is a speed limit, why is a car designed to go 100 kilometres above that speed limit? Like why is there not a speed limiter on the car? I don't understand that.
I know people listening now would be like, no, he's going to say it again. The technology is so simple. And it exists. Yeah, yeah. And it, yeah. You know, we were talking yesterday in this context, these interlockers that they would put on cars, you know, that you'd have to do a breath test.
Yeah.
And if you're above the blood alcohol limit, you know, and people were pointing out, you just get your friend to do it or someone else stand outside the pub and rent their breath, their clean breath out. But whatever. The point is, though, I mean, the technology is out there. And,
yeah, well, to be honest, but down the road, we would probably not drive. Like there will be AI, there will be self-driven cars, the cars were driven by AI and they won't be allowed to speed. Like that would, like it might sound daft, but AI is advancing so quickly that is something that probably in our lifetime we will see, I would think.
Yeah, but in the meantime,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I'm with you. I don't understand why those limiters are not placed in cars. And the refrain always, you know, from some politicians when new laws or new legislation or new penalties are introduced is, you know, we're going too far. We just need to enforce the rules we have. And there's some logic in that argument. But imposing speed limiters in cars, Ellen, is literally that, isn't it? It is enforcing the rules we have.
Yeah, I guess we just need to be a bit more innovative. I tend to agree with you on that one. But at the end of the day, it's down to civic responsibility and personal responsibility, whether you're a motorist. And I know there's a reluctance to talk about the responsibility of pedestrians and cyclists too, but we all have a role to play in terms of just our personal responsibility. I don't know, I was talking to someone the other day who said, ever since COVID, they just think we've all become a bit lax when it comes to the rules. We just feel like we can test the rules. Well, and is that what it's a little like?
I remember people talking about the arson attacks on mooted asylum centres. That, you know, people kept doing it because people kept getting away with it.
Yeah.
People test the rules because they feel they can get away with it. I mean, it's not that long ago someone encouraged me to have a pint, and they said, so "As long as I've been in this country, I've never been breathalyzed. Go on, you'll be all right before driving home."
Yeah.
You know, that was the argument made. Anyway, listen, 087 1400. 106. Road debts are now not for the future. Limiters mean less tax for the government. It will not happen. Somebody else says, I drove from my house on the East Coast to the Aran Islands on National Slowdown Day last Friday, and I didn't see a single guard on the roads. There's not enough enforcement. And somebody else backs up that point. They say there's three rules that would reduce road debts. One, enforcement. Two, enforcement. Three, enforcement. So a theme emerging on the text line. Listen, before you go, because we are almost out of time, I mean, the most worrying aspect of the news today is that the potato crop shortage is going to lead to a big spike in the price of a bag of crisps, Kieran.
It's probably tough, not surprising, because there has been like one of the wettest, it never ends. Yeah, never ends.
Well, what will the government intervention be in budget 2025?
I think the solution for farmers and crisp producers is to give them the same cachet as vinyl records and just charge a premium price, like you can pay 40, 50 euro.
Reassuringly expensive.
Yeah, so the hipsters will all jump on board for 40 euro bags of crisps. Some of them are close to that anyway.
Some of them are. Yeah. Ellen, what treat would you not go without? Despite price hikes?
That's a good question. Like, I don't care how much a Cadbury's Dairy Milk costs. I'm going to have
one. Classic. Cadbury's Dairy Milk.
Keep it simple. But I feel like that's a requirement.
Kieran, what would you not go without?
What would I not go without? That's a good question. Coffee, I think. To be honest, I can't wake up without coffee. I don't sleep great.
How many cups
of
coffee a day?
Two.
Two.
There wouldn't take more than two, yeah.
All right, okay. Anyway, listen, 087 1400 106, what would you go without? Kieran Cunningham, Chief Sports Writer with the Irish Daily Star. Ellen Butler, News Talk reporter. Thank you both very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.